Ah, oh, right. So Mary's has sent me a script.
There you go.
Right. Okay, now here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is Nabil Shabazz, and you are listening to... You can see I haven't acted for ages. To the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast!
APT Services, Lavazzi at boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 228. I'm Adam, and I haven't got a quote this week because I've been too busy. Here's Debbie Melrose.
Just a body? It's a bit casual, isn't it?
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
May we continue? I do grow tired of these constant interruptions.
And Mary Lang.
And I don't have a quote this week either, so how
about that? Oh, I have one for you.
Okay, you read one for me.
Far out!
And I've got one for Adam. Do you want to
Marsh Minnow Magnificence. Sorry, no, I'll do it the other way. Marsh Minnow Magnificence? I didn't see the question mark.
No, I have a better one for Adam.
What's that?
You must relieve my suffering!
Yeah, yeah. All right, I've got one for
That's
myself.
That's what she said.
Protect me, I am your lord and master. There we go, that's one I thought of all by myself.
My apologies for wasting the court's time.
Yeah, all right, let's stop on the blooming quotes. Right, this week we're looking at Mind Warp for the purpose of later on in the show, Nabil Shaban is coming on the show and hopefully won't mind being bored by... Oh, look, you can hear the theme tune. Oh, that's one of the worst theme tunes ever, so I'll turn it off.
You keep saying that.
Me, because it's one of the worst theme tunes ever.
Actually, it is.
No, I did sit there grimacing, and my husband's like, "What's the matter?" I was like, "No, it's, I don't enjoy this thing."
It's horrible. Yeah, Philip Martin wrote this one, and yeah, it picks up from the end of a story we recently reviewed. Funny enough, which was Mysterious Planet, is it not?
Correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so the at the time I watched this,
Master.
Yes,
Master. I did not know until reading the info text for this that they didn't do all of the courtroom scenes all at once, like at the beginning or the end or whatever. Mm. But they do courtroom scenes, and they'd store the stupid set, and I guess they'd shelve all of those old Time Lords as well. You know, put them in cryogenic suspension or something, and then they'd haul everything out and... do another courtroom scene. It's really a waste of time.
Yes. Anyway, at the time of watching this, I thought that the effect they used to make it look like an alien planet was actually quite good. Although I think that the half sort of setting planet, Thoris Major, is it? I don't know which one it is now.
Alpha.
Was looked quite good, but I just thought the only way they could have made that work is by making only the planet itself look purpley pinky. And when the TARDIS itself landed, it would look normal. But unfortunately, the filter actually... maybe the light would have an effect on it. I don't know. At the time, I thought it was really good. But watching it this time, I wasn't that impressed with it. But
Master?
What?
The two actors there getting out of the TARDIS were extremely afraid that they were going to electrocute themselves because they had misjudged the tide. The TARDIS wasn't really supposed to be sitting in the water like that.
No, excuse me. And when you say two actors, are you implying it wasn't Colin Baker and Nicola Bryant?
It was them. It is
the two actors.
5:10 in the morning.
It's 5:10 in the morning.
Right. I'm trying to. I have a Diet Sisters Drop Extreme in front of me, which I'm trying to. It's the equivalent of a Mountain Dew Extra.
Oh, I see.
It's got extra caffeine trying to wake my mind up, which is it's somewhat warped, I guess. Yeah, right. Anyway.
One of the longest excuses we've ever had on the show, and I think Reese might be suing you soon.
They have battery packs and wireless mics on, and they were afraid that they were going to electrocute themselves because the water there was about a foot and a half deep.
I would say it must have been a hot sunny day because she's going around in a very sort of lightweight top on, isn't she?
Actually, when they liquefy the rock, that's a brilliant effect.
Master?
Yes.
Telscombe Cliffs in East Sussex is a unofficial nude beach, and they even had a they had someone they had to kick out of the beach who was there nude, who didn't like his beach being invaded by a television crew.
Miserable sod. So anyway, they have a little stroll along the beach, and then we have an interruption with the Valyard saying, was it the Valyard moaning about the sort of the fact that, this is inconsequential?
It was the Doctor. The Inquisitor. The Doctor says this isn't right. You know,
I do love the Brickyard line. Did you pick up any more? Did you pick up any more Valyard insults in this show? I don't think there were that many different ones, were there?
Brickyard, barnyard, backyard.
Much the same as
Brickyard. Yeah, it's the same ones, I believe.
I think I wrote a few down, backyard or
be interesting if any of us could actually think up ones that he didn't use.
Yes.
Wouldn't it?
I am a little bit unprepared this week.
Typical. We have a special guest on, you're unprepared.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm more prepared than... Hi, this is Louise Jameson.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Talk about hi, this is Louise Jameson. I'll say, with Nabil being on the show, you would have thought, Matthew would have thought, this is an opportunity to sort of get Nabil to go over to Conquer Strobris for next year, wouldn't you? But no, he can't be on the show. Anyway, yeah, so they get...
I don't think that's how it works.
They get attacked by the Ruck, I think that's what...
It's the Ruck, yeah.
And the Doctor accidentally...
What about that hard place?
Pardon? Oh, very funny. so he's supposed to be half asleep this morning. Is able to come up with that one.
Seems pretty switched on.
Yeah, so apparently the Doctor accidentally
shoots
it.
The CD phaser discharged accidentally.
The CD phaser, does it play music as well? And phaser, that's Master. Clearly that's Paramount copyright on that particular word.
Colin Baker says that phaser thingy is one of the only two props, at least at the time they recorded commentary. That's one of two props that he was able to steal from the set.
Oh, so he's got it, has he?
Yeah.
He's got it.
Well, I wish we'd known that before. He was only, good, you tread on him. He's a naughty dog. before he came on our show. It's a sort of slight friend, acquaintance of the show, isn't it?
They've
been on for about 2 seconds, rather like Caitlin Blackwood, an acquaintance of the show. You say more than the one sentence and you become a friend of the show. I think we're getting a sort of hierarchy now, aren't we? Which I'm going to have to work out. I'm going to have a great big board on the wall. We've got friends of the show, family members of the show, and patrons of the show. Which you get up to three as patron of the show, so Andrew Cartmell.
How about God in the show?
That's when you come on for a fourth time, so that would make Toby Haydock God of the show.
Yes.
So anyway,
they
meet this chap whose name escapes me, the black guy with the purpley tunic thing.
Can't remember.
Yes?
Frax.
Frax, is it?
Don't swear.
But, Master, he is also Clive Jones, father of Martha Jones.
Oh, is he? There you go. I thought there was something familiar about him.
Yeah,
so Martha was obviously somewhere in the background during this story. So King Icarus, Brian, I'm playing the same character from Flash Gordon, Blessed.
Yes.
Is attached.
Gordon's alive!
And he does the John Pertwee leg up in the air thing. Mm-hmm. While being attached to machines because...
It's all the hissing and the fizzing and fuming he does.
Yeah, Crozier's got attached to his machine.
Yeah, I don't know whether that his performance is part of what makes this story or if it's so over the top it ruins it. I don't know.
I'll tell you about that later. But yeah, Crozier, I do love the way he is portrayed. And he's got a strange way of emphasising certain words, which I found very entertaining. It's a very sort of different type of performance and very, very good.
It was very understated, I thought. You know, he was just very casual about it all. Like, yeah, I'm just going to move this brain to this this body.
I think it's brilliant.
After he sips his tea.
Yes.
I love that.
A cup of tea.
he was so amoral. He was almost like the Ronnie without being over the top. Mm.
Which Ronnie would that be? The Ronnie Corbett or Ronnie Burke?
Oh, ba-dum-ching.
or Ronnie Biggs, even. So they meet Dorf. So now, Dorf was a particularly good character again. And the fact that he was able to open his mouth up that wide to show off these teeth, basically for the whole of playing this part. And I think he did such a good job, this actor. I don't know who that is. That's two really good performances. Oh, thank you. But I didn't know the actor's name. But I tell you, he was fantastic. And he's such a believable character and loved it. Now, right, so meet Dorf. He's been chained up and still is. And eventually they sort of gradually infiltrate the inner sanctum of this sort of, at the moment, it's a load of caves, isn't it? And then finally we get around to meeting Syl and the great Kiv, or the Lord Kiv.
Kiv is a brilliant character.
Yes.
Christopher Ryan.
I can't stop thinking of his Sontaran character at the same time.
Or the young ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about
to
say the young ones.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, that too. But I do like the makeup on this. I think there's, you know, as far as classic Who goes, I think I've got to say it's pretty good.
Have you noticed they're greener than they were?
Yeah, it's a different. It's definitely a different costume for Syl. I mean, they only had Syl previously.
They repainted. We can ask him if you want to, but they used the same body part, but repainted it and then completely reconstructed his head because the other one was just too uncomfortable, and his crest is lower.
Okay, still blooming good. Right. So are they want to use Yukarnas's head, or are they just trying
to... No, they're trying to persuade him to sign a contract.
By sort of quelling his...
barbarian urges.
Yes, his urges.
They remind me very much, you know, of Hitchhikers, the ship where they... The Vogon ship, the sanctum where Syl and Kiv are having conversations with all the atmospheric mists and you know, the green. It did very, very much remind me of that, so I might have to go and watch that later.
This brain looked a bit sort of plasticky, but I suppose it was.
Well, I like the fact it's pulsating.
Yeah. Sorry.
We've gone all quiet.
So just basically that's it for that episode.
Pulsating brain, there you go.
I'm sitting here watching the title sequence of episode 2 for some obscure reason. So I think I haven't had enough sleep over the last few days. But meanwhile, the doctor's the doctor's been attached to the machine. I presume to see if his head is suitable for Lord Kiv. But unfortunately, they do something to his mind, which makes him a bit weird.
Yeah, but this is where it gets really perplexing because.
Yes, yeah, they may not have.
Yeah, they may not have. They may have. They may not have. But you're not given. I know it's part of the story, but you're really sort of puzzled for most of this episode.
Yes.
Going, well, what are you doing? You know.
Well, you know that he is obviously. I think he eventually comes around from this. Yeah. But for these next two episodes, he's clearly not himself.
Shoot, we need him alive to sign contracts.
It's quite sad. It's because it's quite early on in the story that the Doctor and Perry have their last sort of moments as companion. Because she, from that moment, she's no longer his companion.
No, exactly.
And that's quite a sad way of ending their relationship, really. And I still think they should have just stuck with the killing her off thing, to be honest with you.
Is this a tradition in the classic Doctor Who that just before a companion leaves, they get a whole episode where they get featured as, you know, the main character? Mm. And then they go.
Possibly. Well, she was certainly the main character in her first story. But he's out of it, isn't he? Look, he's leaning up against the wall.
Whistling.
While Yukarnas and Perry flirt.
Are they supposed to have a chemical attraction between them?
I don't know. Obviously, Yukarnas clearly quite likes her straight away.
He doesn't really act subtle.
Well, she's a bit young for him. That's the only thing he can probably say on that one.
Well, it's Brian Blessed. You can't have subtle.
Yes, yeah, true. Yeah. Really.
Subtle is not in the vocabulary.
Meanwhile, Lorcan can't handle the pain of his brain being too big for its head. Why is that, though? Why is his brain too big for his head?
Because these creatures, where they... I know they're called the Mentors, but that's not their race.
Syl did actually mention their race somewhere in episode 4. Now, if I'd been doing a quiz, I would have made a note of it.
They are... they're evolving so quickly that this apparently happens to their race, that their brains are getting too big for their skulls.
And they die, and apparently he's going to die.
They die,
So they need to get it out.
And Lord Kiv is too important to just let die under those circumstances.
Yes, brilliant mind.
Correct.
Yes, there we go.
Otherwise, they'll end up poor.
Yeah, I was going to say all the little props and stuff that are sort of centered around Syl are superb.
Yeah.
The little things he's carried around on. And
I can't believe Perry can run around on those wee heels.
Yeah. Mind you, there is a moment where when some great big burly black man carries Syl.
Mm-hmm. Syl, yeah.
Where he's not connected to anything, his little translator thing on his chest doesn't flash or anything. That's the only continuity thing I noticed actually during the.
They don't really mention, even though we know from the Varos that's a translator.
Mm.
They barely mention once that those are translators in this entire story.
Okay, I'm sorry about that,
Master. I just realized something. Those, you know, the weird pink and yellow outfits that the matron and is that her? Yeah, Matrona. And Perry are wearing, those are reflecting the colors of the sky and the beach outside.
Are they?
Yeah.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Well, impressive. Well, good work on the designer for this particular story. Right, the doctor, meanwhile.
They're rather ugly. It doesn't go together. But...
Yeah, but that was the 80s, those bright colors.
Yes. Well, the doctor, meanwhile, is trying to deflect the notion that his head might be an ideal... candidate for Lord Kiv, but fortunately for the plot and for Doctor Who, in fact, they decide his head isn't suitable.
If he can find someone else.
Yes, but they did actually. It's a shame your head's not suitable. Crozier says towards the end of the story. I love this bit where what's his chap called again?
I don't know
who
the bloke in the black.
I can't see what you're saying.
The black tunic in the purpley sort of dark red tunic. The black guy who was Martha's dad.
Frax.
Frax.
This is where Perry meets up with him in the dark caves, and then I think she stamps on his foot or something silly.
Ooh.
Yes,
that's such an easy way to get away. It's so funny. and then Ikanis meets up with Dorf, and that's a really good and amusing and quite nice relationship they have.
Brother warriors.
Yes, and he can't help calling him a dog by mistake. You know. Dog of war. I mean, great warrior.
Great warrior. I do think it's quite funny how Matrona just accepts that Perry is amongst her group. Mm. You know, I will disown you if you say anything, but come and work with me for a bit. You know, just all of a sudden, no reporting her to the authorities or anything. Just, you know. Come and be a servitor.
Yeah, and there's also that from that scene where she's dressed up in what looks like a medieval sort of wench costume,
bright
isn't it?
Pinks and yellows,
The doctor sort of gives her a really hard time, and I remember watching it and thinking, oh, I hope that's just because the doctor's sort of, you know, he's had his mind slightly sort of mashed up, because you don't want the doctor sort of...
He's had his mind warped.
Yes, well done. You don't want the doctor acting like the doctor's acting in this story. This is the only thing I don't like about it, to be honest with you. I don't like the way the doctor is in most of the story and the way they haven't got a relationship anymore. Because I like the doctor and the companion to have a nice sort of departure. I mean, even with Adric, it was, of course, that they were getting on. They had a bit of a row, didn't they, early on in the episode?
Yeah.
In the Earth Shock we're talking about. And then, obviously... when the end came for Adric, it was all the more moving because they had sort of patched things up a little bit.
Yeah, this is my least favorite companion leaving story.
Is it?
Just doesn't seem. It doesn't
I think
seem
it's
right.
Most people's least favorite.
Yes,
I don't know about that.
Whole chaining Perry to the rock.
Yeah, again, that showed that the Doctor hadn't quite regained his marbles. There was a good, it's a good scene though, because you think, oh, maybe he is sort of playing along with it, and then you realise he's
like,
isn't.
It's me, I'm your friend, and then he carries on. Yeah,
it reminded me a little bit of Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS when they were on the beach. There, I know she wasn't chained to any rocks, but it, there's something about it that reminded me of Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS. Don't know why. It's totally irrelevant.
I'm trying to forget that particular episode.
Among others.
Yes.
Of that season.
So, where did that one end? Oh, yeah, that episode ends with Yukanus, who's the side of the Doctor's his sworn enemy, because early on in the story, he gave them away.
Yes.
And he turns up to kill him. And, of course, Perry steps in to save the Doctor. For the last time. Shame he couldn't return the compliment. But yeah, I quite like the sort of underlying parts of the plot where the Doctor's using this sort of as a proof that he needs to be in certain places to save things from going on, and everything he tries to show them is sort of turned on its head. Mm. Now, if this wasn't a part of Trial of the Time Lord, that's what would make it even more confusing. Because, you know, it's clearly this is written to be part of this 14-part story. Whereas the first story, I suppose you could have taken the trial bits out and it could have been a story on its own. With this one, it is clearly intertwined with the whole Trial of a Time Lord story.
Right.
So, now the Doctor, meanwhile, is sort of collaborating with Crozier and Syl and Kiv.
They found that body of a fisherman...
Yeah, which like looks so strangely exactly like Christopher Ryan.
Yes.
And that's a really good little costume, though. I like that one.
It's got a sting. The
one with the one. The sting, yes.
Yeah, really good. And the fact that he's able to transfer the mind without actually transferring the brain, I think. Is that right? Or did he transfer it
they
literally?
They transferred the brain over, I think.
By surgery.
Yes. So surgery.
So, meanwhile, Yukanus and Perry continue flirting. Well, more of Yukanus flirting with Perry. And then this is a silly thing where she gets in between Dorf and Yukanus and between a sort of incomprehensible row. Because you cannot understand what they're saying during it. It's a sort of row. Because there's obviously no script.
They've got making up all these words as they go along. Yeah. Mm.
That would have been quite funny, though, if they thought of putting in a character in there called Gordon. or something like Gordon. Because there's a couple of times where there are characters that, the ones that have been made old, you know, that they could have said, he's alive!
Any excuse.
Yeah, would have been quite funny, wouldn't it? I think.
Yeah, they found the body on the islands of Brack.
Apparently. Did they?
Yeah. I wrote it down.
You could have said, where do you think they found the body? And then see if anybody come up with the answer of that one.
I could have done. I didn't know. I was writing questions this week.
No, you weren't. I could have said you were.
Are we having a quiz?
I would not have
no,
known.
We're not having a quiz. it'll be back next week, hopefully.
I was hoping we're not having a quiz.
Yeah, how can we have a quiz?
Way too much confusing
how
information.
How could we possibly have a quiz with our special guest this week? Although we did
and
have
it, I guess it is unusual Daphne for me not to want a quiz, but...
The only special guests that have ever been on quiz are Toby Haydock and Daphne Ashbrook. And didn't Daphne and Vito win?
Yes, that was fantastic.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, so, for our listeners, that was episode, I've forgotten now, Daphne Ashbrook. Was that her second appearance? I can't remember now.
You can find it.
I'm still
you can
working
find
my
the
way
episode
through.
And dub it in there.
Yeah. I was thinking about giving up a prize, actually, of every single episode of the show on DVD or on a memory card. Because there's some people who don't realise that they can actually access our earlier episodes.
Oh, I've been doing that slowly but surely.
Indeed, you're going to be doing that for a long time.
Wow, you are dedicated.
My first correspondence with you was that I couldn't download, say, episode 6 or something.
Did I send it to you? Oh, that's a good sign.
No, you made sure it was on Podbean.
Aren't I nice? What other podcast producer would do that for specific listeners? Anyway, the Doctor, meanwhile, is offered a marsh minnow by Syl. And it, obviously, he sort of shoves it in his mouth, and then the expression on his face
it's almost like it's the moment when he goes back to being the Doctor.
It's so disgusting
that he shocked himself back into being normal.
Yeah. Well, there could have been some chemical in the marsh minnow.
I did spend most of it going, huh? Most of this episode. Yeah. Wasn't too sure.
He wasn't a very good actor. The one who sort of looked a bit like a Native American with his poncho, sort of cross between a Mexican and a Native American.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't the best actor ever, was he? And I think it's a bit of a shame for him, basically, because he was surrounded by particularly good actors, so it did rather stand out that he wasn't particularly good, unfortunately. Sorry, Mary, I know you liked him.
He was my favourite.
What else is going on here? The Doctor sort of things happen, then the Doctor stands up in court and says, that's not how it happened. Oh yeah, and then Perry and Yukarnas get shot.
Zapped, yeah.
And it's quite sad in a way. Is Perry dead? They say no. Well, in fact, she probably was, but then she wasn't, you know.
Yes.
Because they must have known, because they are the Time Lords, and the thing is, though, the Inquisitor explains to the Doctor at the end of the story that, oh, we had to intervene, da-da-da-da-da, but at this stage she lied and said that Perry was, in fact... What she should have said was, not yet.
Not yet, yeah.
I know
that
would have given the game away a bit, but...
I like the fact it's Linda Bellingham, because when I was... 1986, I was 9, and I remember watching
this. Give that away.
Yeah, well. And she was the OXO mum for most of my life. The gravy mum.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was quite odd.
It's funny to say that. My
association.
My original memory of Linda Bellingham was there was like a little magazine, like what you'd call a Take a Break type magazine when I was a kid in the 70s. And Linda Bellingham was topless on either in a page within this, and very pleasantly topless as well. Very...
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Yes, and
for listeners,
because I knew she was an actress at the time, so I was seen on telly, and that's why it stuck in my mind. Because this actress I'd seen on telly with her boobies out in a magazine.
Fair enough. That informed your young mind.
Yes. So I never got that out of my mind whenever I see Linda Bellingham now. She's not been very well recently.
No, can't remember what.
So hopefully that's come to, because obviously Janet Fielding hasn't been very well, but I think she's a bit better now than she was.
Yes, so. I read that she was doing better.
Oh, Janet or Linda?
Yes,
Janet.
Mm-hmm. Janet.
Well, speaking of the Linda Bellingham character, I found it very confusing that throughout this trial, she doesn't seem to know anything. Everything's coming from the Valyard. Or the Doctor, and then all of a sudden she turns to the Doctor and she starts reeling off all this information about Perry, and I'm thinking, whoa, where did she suddenly get all this?
Mm. Well, she's a
Doctor. This happened Matrix. Because she did this and you did that, and da, da, da. I'm thinking, wow. She went from not knowing anything.
Yeah. This is a point in which this story in which they keep on emphasising the Matrix never lies, which of course, once they say something like that, you know it does.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Well, exactly. they emphasised that early in the first episode.
I did find it quite confusing, most of it. Just not in a bad way, but just in a sort of, well, how did she, like Mary said, how did she suddenly know when she'd been pretty much asking the questions?
There's a lovely scene when Perry and she's talking to Yukarnas about being homesick and stuff
time
like
sick.
That. Did you say time?
She said time sick.
Did she?
Yeah, she wants to go back to her time.
Which of course you knowing. Obviously, when you watch it originally, you didn't know Perry was going to, well, I like to say die, because we never see her again. And
we see a flashback, don't we?
Yeah.
I can remember that really strongly, because I'd just seen Flash Gordon for the first time.
So there's a flash.
And it was flash a flash. Bit. Yeah, and I saw her hugging him.
Perry's alive.
Perry's alive. I saw her hugging him, you know, and it was like, I can remember that really vividly for when I was little. But, yeah.
Well, you're remembering, obviously, the criticism that Nicola Bryant got when she first took on the role of Perry, and, you know, looking at the development she's had in the 3 years she played the part, it's quite nice that she didn't look out of place among some amazing actors in this particular story, unlike that chap.
Yeah.
And she's really held her own.
Except with Mysterious Planet, she really improved after the hiatus.
Well, she was opposite or alongside Brian Blessed, and you know she's held her own in those scenes really, really well. And I do love the fact that obviously Brian Bless's characters always sort of play on the fact that he's quite a loud mouth, and that towards the end when that blows, please don't shout.
Yes. Yes. Don't.
This is fantastic.
It's just nice for him to be quiet.
And there's some bits in which he's very, you know, he tones himself down and it's lovely. Because obviously that's not part of the character he played in Flash Gordon. That's obviously where he's creating a character for King Akarnas. Beautiful stuff. So Perry ends up going off to the lab, and the Doctor meanwhile is given the chance to find somebody instead of Perry to take on the role of Kiv. But unfortunately for the Doctor, Perry's already being processed while he's trying to find someone. Mm-hmm. And all these things that happen from here on, the chaos and everything, which reason why apparently the Time Lord's taken out of time. It's lovely the way the Doctor's lost control of the whole situation, and it's just depicted so well, and it all escalates. And that part of it works really, really well for me, because obviously Akarnas and him have teamed up. Akarnas is going to kill him after they've finished the job, obviously, but so it's just as well in some ways they took him out of it.
I like the American reference when Perry says, "What blood tests? I'm not marrying anyone." Because, we don't have to do that here, do we? You
know? I don't understand that one. You have to enlighten me on that one.
Yeah.
What's that all about then?
I don't know, because we don't have to do them here either.
Yeah, it depends on the state.
Yeah.
Does it?
Depends on your state.
Oh, I see. Okay. Just to make sure you're not related or something compatible.
No, sorry. It's testing for various venereal diseases.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, okay.
So,
seems pretty sensible.
That's right. And Dorf gets done in.
Aww.
Which is quite a sad scene. And brilliantly acted again by Brian Blessed, because he's trying not to show that he's upset about his comrade's death. And then he tries to sort of...
Dorf must have had joy by the end of it.
Yes, is deflecting it in a way to say, "Oh, it doesn't matter. He's gone to a better place. He'll come back as another warrior." But he's clearly sort of he's grieving over the death of.
I like the explanation that he gives when Perry keeps pressing him about, "Well, what happens? You know, well, you come back as another warrior. Well, what about and where are you heading? Well, to be the king, you know. And what happens when you're the king? Well, then you go on to, you know, the great Valhalla.
You join the other kings. You fight.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. To fight more. Yes.
And what then? Oh my God. Well, what else is there?
It's quite sad in a way. The Doctor goes back to doing what he does. He saves people. He's saving the bad actor. And because he did that, he didn't really have time to save Perry, unfortunately. Again, that scene I told you about with the shouting is really funny. And that's quite sad. And they shave her head, and that's the last time we see her as Perry, really. Which is quite sad. Ooh, and I've just jumped all the way back to the beginning. And I love the scene where
you're not counting dimensions in time?
No, I'm not. I've forgotten about that. Anyway, there's lots of people sort of doing strange turning around in circles in the corridor while all the chaos starts, and Syl gets carried into the main lab.
The servants have gone mad. Well, good riddance, I
say. We don't have to do paraphrasing.
Your mind control has been broken.
Yes, but just before Perry gets her mind taken away.
I do like the way Kiv responds to being in a warm-blooded body. That's really good. Yeah, the toes wriggling.
Again, acted
blood
brilliantly
flowing.
By Nick and Bryce.
But
then this is my favourite scene. The way the Doctor sort of wanders through the corridor, the TARDIS appears, and he just, did I say corridor? And then walks backwards into it. Love that scene. Yeah. I think it's so atmospheric, and of course, and they repeat the highly expensive piece of graphics and technology they used for the TARDIS being taken into the trial, whatever it is, spaceship
that
thing.
Is ship, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, then the Doctor says, "Why did you take me out then? I was just about to save the whole situation," which he's probably right. He would have done.
Yes, he would have.
So, what were they probably thinking of? It was because obviously the Valiard had been. Yeah. Orchestrating everything, which is technically the Doctor has been orchestrating everything, so that adds to the confusion that Mary is talking about. And of course then shaved head Perry, obviously the Time Lords then put Akarnas in the time bubble so as he can kill them at the time that's suitable for them, and we get that famous line that I said at the beginning, "Protect me, I am your lord and master." And at the time I found that quite shocking, because it's Perry, but it's not Perry, and it's horrible, and she's dead, and But that's how it, I think sometimes drama, and it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be hard hitting when a loved character gets killed off. And I agree. Nicola Bryant thinks that they should have just killed the character off there and then. And I totally agree with her. It would have been more hard hitting. Although at the time I was hoping, I seem to remember hoping they were going to bring her back because I liked Perry a lot, you see. But I think, you know, in hindsight, they should have just killed her off. Yeah, the bald cap didn't work particularly well because she had too much hair up to try for it to keep
it. Did
under
all right.
But
yeah, I believed it. Yeah.
And the fact that they changed her voice worked really as well.
Mm. Yeah, I like that change.
I have a lot of trouble watching that last episode because of that.
Yeah. But the thing is, she was brilliant, but it was a very, I mean, Kiv himself had not been acting like that at all throughout the whole thing. But
I like, because it does harken when, what is it, in David Tennant's tenure with Rose, when she gets taken over.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that's yes. all about bums and tits.
Yeah.
Whereas this is about toes.
Yeah. And,
but
that,
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it did really sort of emphasise how superb Tennant and Piper were at or character acting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that essentially
would a brain being put into a body like that where there was no concept of toes be able to understand toes?
Well, because it was just his thoughts, wasn't it? They didn't actually transplant the brain. He'd worked out how to transplant everything.
No, that's the reason her...
That's what
I thought
he
was
said.
The brain.
No, he'd perfected it, and that's why they had to stop him, because that's why the Time Lords wanted to stop him, because with the technology that he'd discovered, he could change everything, apparently.
What I'm saying is that since the creatures didn't have toes or feet, how could he understand the concept where he's going, oh, I have toes?
Well, because it wasn't exactly his brain in her.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it. It was just,
all right.
It's her brain and his brain. Yeah.
No, yeah. It was the essence of his brain.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Whereas the rest of it was still, you know, helping to function.
Yeah,
the body,
they sort of had to keep parts, unconscious parts of Perry.
And Crozier said it perfected it rather than transplanting a brain waves instead. Yeah.
It was a bit heartbreaking that Crozier had no regard for Perry at all. The fact that he's her mind no longer exists, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But yeah, I couldn't help while watching that scene thinking kidneys.
Kidneys.
Yeah.
Kidneys. Spleen.
Spleen. Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't like colour.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to say what I think about this one. It's grown on me over the years. There are aspects of it, like you say, are a bit confusing, but I think it's that as a story, it's a pretty good story, apart from the minorly confusing things. It is enjoyable to watch, because I didn't feel sleepy at all, and I was really tired last night, and I sat down and watched it and really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Kept you going.
Yeah, I think the performances in it sort of make it highly entertaining. All round very, very good for me. I quite liked it. Debbie, what did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was fun. I did find a lot of it confusing, as we said throughout when we were reviewing the episodes, but I can vaguely remember it from when I was watching it the first time round. So it was like revisiting an old friend and really enjoying it. And the acting was amazing. Once Brian Blessed calmed down a bit, it was really enjoyable. And yeah, as you say, I love the alluding to his shouting all the time at the end of the episode.
You've got a bit of a sore throat.
I have. I've got a cold. Aww. Yeah, no, don't worry. And I won't pass it to everybody. I just thought it was good fun. Really enjoyed it. And I thought, her name's lost.
The birds
Nicola's performance was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Loved it.
Kirby.
Master.
Your turn.
I'm very mixed about it. Like, I find Perry's death to be very emotional and will avoid watching it because of that. But all in all, it is a very good story. I come into this not being as familiar with Trial of the Time Lord, I didn't see this. According to my notes, I first saw this on June 11th, 2011. So, yes, I keep notes.
Oh, do you?
No, it's good.
And
I like the picture. I like the pictures of your diary. I think they're brilliant.
Well, this was just emails to myself, starting to watch Doctor Who, Trial of a Time Lord, Mind Warp, Sixth Doctor for the first time ever. Looks like I tweeted it as well. I post on Facebook and I post, well, whatever.
You're a Whovian, that's fine.
The next day I said, just finished watching Doctor Who Mind Warp. Poor Perry! ! I think I knew about that intellectually, but this, the first time I was watching it, was kind of, it kind of hit me. I love Brian Blessed in it. Now, Mary.
Yes. Yes.
Had you ever seen this one before?
I've seen one episode of it before. Chicago TARDIS, they were screening the whole Trial of the Time Lord. And of course, you know, with other things going on, you know, I would just go into the screening room periodically. So I would catch an episode of here and an episode there. And when I saw an episode from this one, I thought, someday when I watch this whole thing, I'll understand. But right now, this is just total confusion.
I shall come back.
So this is the first time I've seen Mind Warp all the way through. And I have to confess that my thoughts are not that much different. Because I found the story very confusing with all the subplots going on and the doctor being sidelined, sometimes seeming like he's in charge and sometimes like he's, you know, not, you know, with it at all. And Perry, who up till now has been, you know, just this screamy, twisted ankle presence, you know, now suddenly seems to be in charge of everything. And when I watched the episode then and now, my attitude hasn't changed either about Brian Blessed. I found him, you know, overbearing and I got tired of him very quickly. And in this one, it's like, oh, well, he just shut up. So to me, he was just too big of a character. But on the positive side, I think the production values were great. It's beautiful and the special effects were nice. You know, the paint box, whatever they were using to color everything. So I liked it cinematically. But boy, the story, not much. And although the acting is really good, again, it was just, what is going on here? And then, like I said, the way the Inquisitor at one moment, for most of this, doesn't have a clue what's going on. And then all of a sudden she's berating the doctor using all this information that I don't know where she got it from. Confusing and upsetting because of Perry. Not my favorite. I'd put it way down there.
Well, there you go. Thanks, Mary.
Master?
Yes.
Master? Uh-huh. Master? I noticed while watching this one, this is one of the ones which has your favorite Sixth Doctor phrase and favorite in air quotes there.
What are you on? I am known as the Doctor.
Yeah, I am known as the Doctor.
He does that quite a lot during this particular series.
No.
Especially in Terror of the Vervoids. Well,
actually, no. I've done some research.
Here we go.
I haven't done complete research, but he doesn't say it that often.
I think
he only says it once in this story.
Well, it's funny you should say that, but the Fifth Doctor said, "I don't know," quite a lot, I noticed.
Yeah, you're right.
Master?
Yes?
I still don't see, unless you just posted, I still don't see a picture of the Andrew Cartmell stuff.
I have posted it. Concasturberus.
Concasturberus. Where?
I have posted it.
You should put it there too for Concasturberus.
Got to put it on Concasturberus as well. Oh, for goodness.
Yes,
sake.
Because he was one of the guests of honor.
Right. Well, I'm just doing a podcast.
And you wouldn't have it if it weren't for Concasturberus. Well, you would, but you probably wouldn't have purchased it as soon.
I'm not trying to do anything. I'm not sure if I'm not busy or anything, is it?
Master?
Yes?
It's my job to bug you.
Yes, clearly.
My contract says so.
Okay. All right, I'm just doing it now.
Yeah, and something that I want to ask Mr. Chaban when he comes on is I read about how there was another script written for the Syl character because he proved to be so popular, but it never happened because, you know, they closed the season down. And what I read said he got paid for it but never even saw the script.
I believe that there was another one that was done for Big Finish, was there not?
Well, yeah, Big Finish picked it up and did it. It was intended to be another TV script because Syl was so popular with the fans.
Mission to Magnus, wasn't it?
Yeah, Mission to Magnus, right.
What's that? Was that a Big Finish one?
There's two for Big Finish because they did that Mission to Magnus as they call it. They have a series called The Lost Stories, and those are the TV scripts that never got made. So that's in their Lost Stories run is the Mission to Magnus. But then just this January, they released a story featuring Syl.
So have you listened to those, Mary?
The one that was released in January, I did. I don't have the one, the Mission to Magnus.
Well, that's
one.
Quite good that you've done slightly more research than I have, obviously, because I haven't listened to any Big Finish stuff that features Syl. So that's good. Yeah. Cool. See, I knew I could rely on you.
Yes, I brought it up because I knew that we had an expert in Big Finish amongst us.
Yeah, and I'm curious to get his take on, you know, what it's like to record with Big Finish, because I hear, you know, from other extras and stuff that they have a great deal of fun and all that. So I'd like to hear if he's got any
good stories. There were way more people in the Big Finish panel than there were in the 20 megabyte.
Be quiet. There's no need to mention that.
Well, I'm going to try. That's
because a lot of people have heard of Big Finish.
Yes, Debbie. So therefore, Debbie, there's no need to go all the way out to Conquer Service next year just for the sake of about six people turning up in a
room. That'll be fun.
Yeah,
it'll
be fine.
What
we need is for Adam.
Cannot look. Unless someone sends me over a $3,000, I cannot afford it. Right.
If I head off now, I could probably make it.
Good day, we're getting post office.
start saving your shillings.
Yes.
Right, I've got...
Or hey, pennies or something.
I've got some emails. I've got an email, actually. I haven't checked my emails for a while, but I've got an email from Ian Kurt that says, would you like some old Peter Capaldi? The First King of Mars by Nick Walker, read by Peter Capaldi. One episode, 14 minutes, broadcast on BBC Radio in 2007. I think he sent some links through in regards to that. So thanks, Ian. But he sent something else as well. I've got a message from Andrew Cartmell. Hi, Adam. Just popped the book in the post this morning. I've got that now, funny enough.
Yes, well, that was July the
3rd. Yeah, no,
I see a picture on the 20 megabyte.
I haven't had any notifications in regards to these Gmails, you know. Right, but I have got one feedback message this morning, fortunately.
Hello, 20 megabyte podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Mind Warp by Philip Martin. Nabil Shaban is good as a really alien. Is this set in caves? It's hard to tell. Syl thinks Perry is repulsive, and then his boss ends up in her body. Perry ends up bald like Karen Gillan. Purple Gilliam the Brown reminds me of that other Doctor Who figure, Radagast the Brown. The Trial of Time Lord stories annoy me because not even the actors know what is going on. Has the Matrix been altered, or is this what happened? They probably saved money by padding them out with the courtroom scenes, which would have been cheaper than action sequences. The Tour de France started in Yorkshire on Saturday. The Americans had some sort of celebration on the Friday. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Right, so next, five minutes.
I'm seeing a whole bunch of pictures on various Doctor Who forums of fireworks being shot off in Britain.
No, what's that all about them?
That day. I was going, what?
Well, the funny thing is, there has been a brand new trailer for Doctor Who, which is quite an exciting one, if I remember rightly. But it seems that... There was a catchphrase for it, wasn't there? That they... said implies what the storyline's going to be. Sorry, not the story arc is going to be for the series, and also a voice which sounded rather like Davros.
Davros, yes, no,
yes,
ears pricked up. He's one of my favourite characters.
So yeah, the Deb's ears pricked. That's my Deb, not
yeah.
Don't I like Davros? She said. Alicia said, "I hate Doctor Who."
You ought to go back and replay some old audio clips of her loving Doctor Who however many years ago it was.
I'm grooming my daughter into loving Doctor Who. She's quite obsessed with Vashti Narada.
Wait till she's 17. She'll pretend she loves it a bit just to please you and then to do a complete flip. Although she might end up getting annoyed when I watch Doctor Who when the series is on and delete the thing. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched it yet. Boy, you didn't like it.
Not long to go.
Well, Julia was wandering through this room while I was watching Mind Warp, and she's going, "What? Oh, episode 3. Oh, episode 4. She's like that.
47 days left. I've got it on my day counter.
Oh,
47
yeah,
days left to go to Doctor Who.
47 days.
47 days.
And counting. actually, that got me thinking I could something in the 3 minutes before 11 o'clock, and I forgot what it was.
Who news?
No, I haven't got time for that.
Oh, okay.
No, there was something else.
Mention the sponsors?
No, there's something else.
You ought to edit your Conquistorbers thing. You don't. No one there knows that I requested that. You need to explain.
I am busy recording a podcast. I haven't got time to write a massive novel of blimmin' blurbs.
What you needed to do was copy what you said in your original post 3 days ago.
Send me the picture and I'll do it.
Well, he put a picture out there. It's just that it's as requested, my package from Andrew Cartmell, which is completely out of context for Conquistorbers.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Kirby. Right, how are we doing? Is he on
that? I'm taking the picture and I'm going to go and find Conquistorbers and do it for you. There you go.
Well, take a look. You could just explain. I could explain too. Just go out there and explain what he said.
Explain my explanation.
Explain your Well, you didn't explain. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm trying to think what I was going to do. Mary, what was I going to do? Oh, I remember now.
I'm looking at a posting by Jeff Waddle. Says, I've got all the time in the world for Nabil Shaban, just out of principle for getting rid of his TV and putting two fingers up to the BBC. That's what I've done.
Yeah, don't forget that one, because you're going to ask him about that, aren't you? What that's in relation to.
Well, what is it in relation to?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. I just find it interesting.
Yeah, well, it's something you might be able to ask. Right then, I have had a message from Ian Kirk that says, last week we welcomed Daniel Bertram Carey, Ashley Hughes, and Wes Simpson and more.
Well, you're now welcoming them again. What the implication is?
No, I'm just saying, that's telling me who... Let me finish what I'm saying. God's sake. So I'll just see if we've got new ones. Well, you talk about Ashley Hughes. I did get a very nice message from Ashley Hughes saying... that the podcast is awesome. So thank you, Ashley.
Yes.
What do we say, everybody? There's something wrong with him, obviously, for thinking the podcast is awesome. But thank you, Ashley.
I've had some nice people get hold of me via Facebook just to say that.
How come they're getting hold of you and not me?
And that it's good to listen. I don't know.
No. You're obviously more approachable than I am. Right then. What have we got then? Who's the last one I just mentioned? Nobody's listening, are they?
I'm not
hello.
Sure.
Yes, I can tell you in just a second. The last one was Amy LaRocque Decline.
Who seems to have left.
Can I go down?
Oh, no. I said Ashley Hughes.
That was a month ago.
No. It's Jonathan Edwards. These are the new members of the group. Andrew John Summerskill. I thought he was already a member. Jason Chuang.
That's from Conquistorbers.
Yep. Yeah, Jason and Hiram were hanging out with us, or we were hanging out with them weekend.
I do remember, Kirby, thank you.
Hiram, I love the long thing we did on the picture of Hiram. The whole big long conversation.
Yes.
Hiram Lester, Peter Svoboszlai, say that, Debbie.
Svoboszlai.
Thank you.
Svoboszlai.
Melinda Kaiser. And Anne-Marie Blackall. Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, which you can join if you go to Facebook and search the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
You can join if you go and join.
Hello, I'm Colin Baker. You lucky people are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, the best podcast on the pod.
Right. Here we go.
Hello there.
Hello, Nabil.
Hello, Nabil.
Hello.
Good morning.
Well, welcome to the 20 Megabyte Podcast. And by the way, you have to sign a contract that you can't sue us for turning you mad in the next few minutes. So how are you?
All right, thank you.
Excellent.
How are you?
I'm fine. We've just been looking, reviewing Mind Warp.
Oh, yes.
Which most of us enjoyed.
I enjoyed it. It's brilliant.
But of course, your first story was Vengeance on Varos.
Yes, that's right.
Which was actually equally as good, I'd say. Mary, mm-hmm. Have you seen Vengeance on Varos?
Yes, I did. I watched it when it was reviewed by the 20 Megabyte the last time.
So did you enjoy that more than you did Mind Warp?
Yeah, the storyline was a lot neater and easier to follow. The Mind Warp was quite confusing. What was it like for the cast? What I read was that the cast was kind of kept in the dark as to where all this was going during the Trial of the Time Lord series. Was that true for you too, Nabil?
Probably, yes. I've got an active imagination, so I was making up things all along as it was happening. So
that's the mark of a good actor.
So you're from America. Are you speaking in America?
Yes. I'm American, and Kirby is American.
Yes.
Right, is Kirby there?
Yes,
I am.
Yeah.
Oh, right. So there is three of you.
There's four of us all together.
There's four, actually.
Debbie and I are on the Isle of Wight, and we're sitting next to each other. It's much easier.
I only live around the corner, so it's easier to pop up.
Right, okay.
How's your life on the convention circuit then, Nabil?
Well, it's pretty easy, really. I don't do too many. I think I've only done one this year, and I probably have one more.
Yeah.
In August, and that's all I've got booked so far.
Are they UK conventions or abroad ones?
Yes, they're all UK.
Well, I've never been
outside the UK, actually.
Have you not?
No.
All
right. Yeah. One of our fellow podcasters who somehow didn't make it this morning to be on is on the convention committee of a convention in Alabama, and we're hoping he'd be on and so we could
persuade
trying to get him to add you to the panel for next year's Conquer Cerberus. Yes.
Conquer Cerberus we just had last weekend in Alabama.
Yeah, we did a podcast from there, didn't we?
Sylvester McCoy and Andrew Cartmell were there.
All right. Yes, right.
Do you not leave the UK by choice?
No, I don't get invited.
Really?
Right, that's it. Conquer Cerberus. Come on.
There we go.
Get hold of Matthew.
We can fix that.
Yes. In fact, this year, February, it was the first time ever that I'd been invited to an American convention. But for some reason or other, I wasn't able to make that. So that's it.
All right.
I'm still only a home base conventioneer.
Well, can I ask which conventions you're going to be at this year?
I think I'm going to, well, in August, I think it's going to be the Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
I don't know, what's it called now? Shadow, something Shadow?
Yeah, I'm just go on Google and search Doctor Who Convention Middlesbrough. I'm sure somebody will do it. Debbie's just about to do it now.
It's August the 23rd, anyway, I know that. And it's in Middlesbrough.
Now, I was watching Mind Warp, and there was a bit of a sort of scene at the end where Eucanus was
Shadow Proclamation.
Thank you very much.
There you go.
was flailing his gun everywhere, and it basically ended up in the death in inverted commas of Perry and Kiv, but it was inconclusive as to whether Syl was killed off. I'd like to think he wasn't.
He probably wasn't. I'm usually reassured at the end of each story that Syl's not dead and that they won't come back. So, and certainly, I think Philip Martin was very keen that I should not be bumped off, or Syl shouldn't be bumped off. And of course, Hello.
Magic
the dog.
Well, I read that Sill became a very popular character, in that they wrote even another script for the following season for Sill to be in, the Mission to Magnus, but that never got made.
Yes. Actually, it was after Vengeance on Varos that I was immediately contacted by the producer, John Nathan Turner, and said, we've already commissioned Philip to write another script for you, and would you be interested? So, of course, I said yes.
Yeah.
And so, in fact, they sent me the contract.
Oh, Christ.
Now, did they send me the script? I think they may have sent me the script. So immediately signed.
Rumor has it you got the script and you even got paid, but the thing never got made.
That's right. Well, yeah. The thing was, I signed the contract. So now the BBC were legally bound to pay me whatever happened.
Oh.
And at that time, obviously, when I signed the contract, they had no idea that the BBC was going to put the series on ice.
Mm-hmm.
Or suspended animation. And then eventually when I heard that Doctor Who wasn't going to be happening, they wrote to me and said, well, we still have to pay you. So
wow.
I got paid for Mission on Magnus twice.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, because
the second time with the audio.
Right, the big finish.
Yeah.
Was that a different experience for you doing an audio adventure?
Oh, very much so, yes. I mean, first of all, I was doing it, 30 years, I think, after having done it the first time. And so that was quite scary. Was I going to be able to recapture Sill and inhabit him? And then, of course, doing audio, there are so many things that are missing. First of all, the costume, obviously. And the costume really helps an actor, usually, in finding the character and, feeling the part. Secondly,
what costume as extreme as yours.
Well, yeah, but you see, even that sweaty, uncomfortable, hot costume, I believed at the time, was helping me to get very angry and very kind of uppity and, annoyed and stuff like that, which I decided I should use to help the character of Sill.
Yeah, well, on screen, you are like never still. You're always wiggling and waving your hands. And so is that all a part of that angry and sweaty?
Well, no. I wanted to try to animate Sill as much as possible.
Okay.
And also animate his tail or whatever that thing was. And but certainly, I think the experience of wearing that rubber suit kind of helped, gave me extra energy. And then, of course, the other thing regarding doing the audio is not being able to see my fellow actors because we're all in separate cubicles.
Well, that's what I wonder. I mean, they show those cubicles with glass windows, so you still don't see anybody else?
For some reason or other, no. I mean, I could possibly see one actor, but generally it's pretty difficult because, first of all, you need to face the mic.
Yeah.
And the windows, but if there are cubicles on either side of you and there are windows, they're to the side. And you don't really want to be turning to, to look at them because your mouth goes away from the mic. So you've pretty well got to look ahead. So there's no contact, no visual contact with your fellow actors. And then, of course, the third thing is you don't have a set or location. And that also, contributes greatly to, creating the atmosphere for the actor and helps with the acting. So I was pretty nervous about whether or not I'd pull it off.
Mary, did he pull it off?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and what I wanted to also bring up was that you had a release pretty recently with Big Finish, just this January, I think, was released The Antidote to Oblivion.
Yeah.
Which actually carries on many of the elements of Time Warp, kind of continues that story. So by this time, you're coming back to do another one. You felt like you were, pretty, experienced and more relaxed about it? Because, I mean, you're in just about every scene.
Well, obviously, I think I was a bit more relaxed the second time round after because the first time with Big Finish, it was the first time in 30 years of playing Sill.
Yeah.
Obviously, doing Antidote, it was a couple of years. So that wasn't so bad. And also, I actually got round to listening to Magnus just before I started to work on Antidote, just to see how I came across, to see if it was working or not. And also to help me, it was like when I did Time Warp, Mind Warp. It was, about 2 years or so after Vengeance. So I had to watch Vengeance to refresh everything before I went in to do Mind Warp. And equally, when I did Antidote, I had to refresh myself. And also, as I said, just to check to see whether or not I had it, whether Sill was there.
And you don't want to sound dramatically different from the last time we heard you.
That's right.
Now, do they have to use some device to give you that warbly sound when you talk?
Probably. do I sound like Sill now?
No.
No, you don't.
No, I don't know. No.
Well, thank goodness for that then. So I guess the answer is they must be doing something to my voice.
Okay, well, I don't know. Maybe you have an ability, to make that sound all on your own.
Well, the laugh must be something you're able to do without... is it a laugh or a gurgle? And what would you call it?
Well, the subtitles called it gurgling.
Subtitles are often wrong. I'd put it down as a laugh. Would you say it's a laugh, Nabil?
I'd say it was a laugh.
It's supposed to be a laugh. That was what was in the script.
Yeah.
But in the first script it said an uncanny or weird laugh.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I do sometimes say gurgle myself when I'm messaging.
Yeah.
So, if I'm talking to someone who, is talking to Sill or whatever, then I will put in brackets, gurgle, gurgle.
Yeah.
it's the only way of describing the closest thing to the Sill laugh.
And would I be right in presuming that is completely invented by you?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, because when I had the initial interview with Ron, the director, and I quickly scanned the script just before we started doing a read, and I immediately came across this weird laugh, and I thought, now that's going to be a tricky one, because it's going to be key to Sill. And I thought, there's a temptation to give a kind of evil laugh.
Yeah.
And but I thought, no, I can't really do that. It's not a Victorian melodrama or whatever.
Yeah.
So
a cloak.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to think, what was I going to do? I knew at the audition that I wasn't going to have it, but I hoped that whatever else I did with the reading, it would be enough to get Ron interested. Because certainly a laugh wasn't going to hook him, because I just didn't have it.
Mm.
So I did do some kind of pathetic laugh in the reading. And of course, afterwards, when Ron said he wanted me to do the part, he said, but you're going to have to work on that laugh. And I said, I know. So off I went and practiced for hours with the laugh. Didn't find anything that I liked. And then I just happened to visit a friend of mine who happened to have a pet snake. And I was handling the snake and examining it and putting its head right up to my face and watching it flick its tongue.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, now what kind of laugh would a snake have? So I was watching its tongue movements and started to mimic the movement, and started to vocalize the tongue movement until eventually I got
a resounding applause for that one.
Yeah.
Yes, iconic. And obviously, when I'm saying that, hoping that the character of Syl, which is really supposed to be a baddie, but I think it's one of the most adorable baddies in the history of the show.
Yes.
I don't think as a Doctor Who fan, I wouldn't like to see Syl back in the current series.
Well, I certainly get a few letters wishing that he was back.
Good.
But, there's not a lot I can do about that.
No, there isn't.
Stephen Pitt has shown no interest, as far as I know.
Have the Big Finish people talked to you about there being more stories?
Not yet.
Mm. Okay.
No.
Well, hopefully that'll change soon. So
they'll probably do it maybe once every 2 years, you know, but they haven't said anything so far.
Yeah, so as not to overuse you.
No, exactly. Mind you, there was a bit of a 25 to 30 year gap in between you playing the part. So not exactly overused, is it?
And I'm certainly not overused in the TV Doctor.
No.
That's right.
Bring back Syl. We have to get a campaign.
Yes, T-shirts, flyers, we're doing that.
Well, I have to confess that when Antidote came out, I didn't listen to it right away. I actually delayed listening to it because I find the Syl character just so repulsive.
Oh, nice.
Done a good job.
That it's like, oh, do I really want to listen to him again? You know, then it turned out to be an absolutely delightful story. So
I'm not a Big Finnish listener. I'm going to have to go out and get those.
Yeah.
That surprises me, Kirby.
Maybe that's why they won't bring Syl back, because everyone thinks he's so repulsive.
It could be.
I think it's a nice repulsive.
Exactly. I think that there'll be a whole new generation of fans, definitely.
He is iconic.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. We love Syl. So, what do you think of the new incarnation of Doctor Who as a TV series, Nabil?
Never watched it.
Have you not?
That's probably why they won't have me back. I was there, you go. It's like, he doesn't watch our program. Right, we're not having him back.
We had someone comment on our Facebook page that said something like, you don't watch television or something?
That's right, yeah. I don't. I stopped watching television, 10 years ago.
Oh, right.
Oh, fair enough.
Ah.
Was that to do with...
No, it was more than 10 years ago. It was 2003 because it was my protest against the illegal invasion of Iraq.
Oh, wow.
And I felt that, you know, the BBC, well, all the media were completely in favour of this criminal activity.
Yes.
And we're not doing enough to, pull Tony Blair across the hot coals about it. And now they might be saying, well, perhaps it wasn't a good idea, and yes, Tony Blair lied about justification for doing it, but at that time they were completely adamant that it was justified and wouldn't countenance any opposition to it. And I was very vocal about it at the time. In fact, I was on a live radio broadcast about a day or two after the invasion, and I was calling the BBC propaganda, the Ministry of Propaganda, but they were completely in favour of the war, etc., 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 and that they were aiding and abetting in mass murder. And so on. That also might be a reason why I haven't had
a small reason.
Fortunately, Big Finish obviously have license from the BBC, so they're not the BBC, so I see where you're going with that one.
Yeah.
It was in 2003, also, when you did stop watching TV in your protest, you did a documentary called The Strangest Viking. Do you remember doing that? That was in that year, wasn't it? Yes, yeah. About the Viking chieftain Ivar the Bonus, or Ivar the Bonus. I can't remember which way it was pronounced.
Well, I like to pronounce it Ivar.
Ivar, okay.
But I have heard people say Ivar.
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 It depends which part of England you heard the word or read the word.
Probably.
So do you reckon if the BBC ever sort of issued some sort of apology and admission that they were wrong in regards to the Iraq thing, but that you might change your mind and go back to watching television again?
I don't think so, because there are so many other things bad that, you know, our government does, and the American government does. We basically follow the Americans in whatever they say and do. And so, I mean, I generally feel that the international mass media just exists to promote various government policies, especially like foreign policies.
That's quite true, because all the newspapers seem to be attached to the various political parties, don't they?
Well, that's right, yeah. And also, you know, it's only the mega rich and, you know, the corporations that have ownership and control of, you know, the mass media. And they are the ones that basically put the politicians in power.
Right.
You know, so that's why, you know, I kind of feel that we don't really have a democracy in Britain, and certainly not in America, because the only people that ever get to be presidents are those that have the support of multimillionaires, really. And if you don't have their support, then you're unlikely to be successful as a candidate.
Right. Or even get your voice heard.
Exactly.
Or get your voice heard, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the moment, the great thing about the internet and things like what you're doing and Facebook and so on is that there is, at the moment, great opportunities for the common person to speak and voice an opinion that is accessible by great numbers of people.
And also accessible by people who want to learn of a specific thing rather than what the newspapers only want to publish. And the sort of evidence of this, and this is getting rather serious, but I don't really mind, is obviously recently we've had this thing with Rolf Harris and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And they swept that under the carpet for many years, didn't they? And same with Jimmy Savile. And now it's topical, and all these people are coming out of the woodwork that have been doing these dreadful things over the years. And that rather sort of proves basically what you're saying. Information's held back. And how many other things do we not know about? Because it's
how many more childhood heroes are going to be revealed as,
absolutely.
I can remember standing in the rain waiting for Rolf Harris to come on stage at Glastonbury. I adored him. And to find this out was crushing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't have done if it hadn't been for alternative media.
And also the fact that, you know, like you say, with Facebook, Twitter and things like that, there's more free speech, although obviously some people get their tweets taken off if they're bullying people, which is it's a good that they've got the control over that. But if you're generally want to voice an opinion or anything like that, Facebook, Twitter is fantastic.
And it's
hard
to get news
thing.
Out from countries that are so controlled by their governments, and the media is so controlled that to be able to sneak it out via Twitter or Facebook.
I don't generally buy newspapers because everything I want to find out about is on the things I follow on Twitter.
I haven't bought a newspaper in absolute years, probably 60 years.
Yeah, I do occasionally buy one if I want to read about triviality or football.
Well, that's triviality, isn't it?
No, it is not.
Yes.
Quite.
Sorry.
For me, football's trivia.
Oh, yay! My goodness, so I'm getting ganged up on
outnumbered.
Anyway, let's sweep it back towards that team.
we insulted football.
Be quiet. So have you got any theatre stuff coming on?
That's
about?
Fine. That's
no.
Any other acting stuff?
I haven't worked in the theatre now since... 2011.
That's not that long ago.
Well, I know, but 2011. I hadn't worked since 2008. I'm not absolutely convinced now that there'll be any more coming up for me. But you never know. There could be famous last words. But I was quite, because 2008 was the last show that I was doing regularly with a theatre in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
They were keeping me employed as an actor for about 10 years because there was no work for me in theatre after 99 down in England. And it was only a friend of mine who was running a theatre in Edinburgh who basically kept me going with about one show, possibly two shows a year. And then his company basically went down the pan in 2008 when they lost government subsidy.
Mm.
And again, I think his theatre was particularly victimised by removal of Arts Council grants because he was political. And, you know, he made the mistake of doing a musical that was against the Iraq War.
Oh, right.
Which was called Babylon's Burning. And so soon after that, he started having problems with the Arts Council in Scotland until finally 2008, you know, they basically stopped funding him. Shame. So, and that was the end of me as an actor as well. I mean, on stage. And then out of the blue, quite surprisingly, the National Theatre in London got in touch and asked if I would do a show with them. So that was a great godsend and a boost to my morale and self-confidence.
Yeah.
Because obviously the longer as an actor you're out of work, the more you begin to worry whether you're any good or not. And and also you lose, you possibly lose the knack, or you start to get stage fright, or, you know, or just basically lose confidence.
Yeah.
So that was quite handy, that job coming up, but there's nothing in the pipeline at the moment.
So hopefully tomorrow you get a phone call from Nicholas Briggs and that'll all change.
Yes.
Maybe.
So I'll talk about...
usually an email nowadays.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, true. So I'm talking about, going back to the conventions, how do you feel about conventions? Do you enjoy them?
Well, I love them. Well, for one reason, it's just nice to be appreciated.
Yeah.
It's nice that fans want to see you and talk with you and so on. But I do worry that I don't have any new stories to tell them. And I kind of think that I've probably said whatever I've got to say about, you know, doing Doctor Who and being Syl and how did I get a job so many times. Yeah. I doubt if there's anyone in the world that hasn't heard it by now. And so I kind of imagine that when at the conventions, people are going, oh, God, that boy is.
Yeah.
And, that, you know, so that, so I'm kind of thinking that maybe I'll start to not do the conventions because I just think that, you know, I've gone past my sell-by date and, you know, I've probably outstayed my welcome.
I think do the USA ones.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's what I was about to definitely. Say. The USA ones. I was pleasantly surprised at the convention that Mary and I recently attended that a lot of U.S. fans tend to be for new series, and yet they were so enthusiastic for Sylvester and Andrew that it a lot of the U.S. fans may not have been exposed to some of the older things.
Yeah,
and it would be nice to get you over here to talk about some of those, particularly some of the smaller conventions, like the one here in Atlanta where I am, or the one in Alabama. Those are smaller ones. I need to talk to some people.
Yeah, see the, if more intimate, I think you're trying to say.
Intimate,
yeah.
Intimate. Bijou.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're in Atlanta, are you?
I'm in Atlanta, yes.
All right, because I was in Atlanta for six weeks.
When?
Back in 94.
Ah.
Do you know the Epps Flight School?
No.
maybe it's gone by now.
I didn't move here until 97, so.
All right. Well, they've been around for quite a while, but it's a flying school and called Epps, named after the people that set it up, I think. And I was one of the lucky ones to win a scholarship to go and learn to fly.
Excellent.
At Atlanta. Because there is, I presume it's still going in Britain, a scheme for disabled people who would be interested in learning to fly. And they will, if you win the scholarship, they'll pay for they'll pay for everything to fly out to the States. The reason they go to, or were going to America, was because it's actually cheaper to learn to fly in the States than it is in Britain. And, you know, it's even cheaper when you compare, you know, the flight tickets to Atlanta and back and, you know, the accommodation and so on. it's still cheaper. So that's how come I ended up learning to fly in America.
Wow.
I just looked them up, and yes, they still exist. They're based out of DeKalb Peachtree Airport.
Yeah.
I know where that is.
Magic. Your opinion is not valid. Stop it. Come here.
That one's in the back. Hang on. I can't get to him.
I'll do it.
Here you get, Deb's just going to shut the dog up.
There's somebody there.
Is there?
Yeah, what Kirby said brings up why conventions in America have become such a big thing for Classic Who, is that when the American conventions bring the actors from the classics, then the fans, as he said, which are tend to be more new Who, when they hear these names they don't recognize, there's an enthusiasm for going back and looking at a lot of the classic to learn more about it, so that when the guest arrives, you know, then everybody's a big fan of that guest as well. So yeah. It's a good way in America to be kind of sparking that interest in the classics.
Yeah.
Well, do you find it difficult? Obviously, bear in mind that your classic appearances in Doctor Who were nearly 30 years ago. You know, you get some questions that you're never possibly going to remember the answers to.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right, yeah. Like, who was the Doctor? I don't know.
Really. A blonde one.
So what was Colin Baker like to work alongside? Do you remember that?
Vaguely. No, he was great. I mean, the thing is, I was a Doctor Who fan.
Yeah,
and no one could do any wrong as far as I was concerned. I just loved being to be working on the show, and it was really exciting. So, and the thing is, the first day of rehearsal, the first ever time, I got into the lift at the rehearsal rooms with Patrick Troughton.
Oh my God!
And he was one of my favourite doctors as a kid. So I just like, oh my word, Patrick Troughton. And I kept looking at him, and I was thinking, should I tell him? Shall I? I thought, nah, I won't tell him. But I thought that was a good omen to be getting in the lift with a former doctor.
Yeah.
Well, second doctor, especially.
That's a great story.
I was mad about the Doctor Who from the time it began in 1963. Right up until the mid-70s, I watched it every Saturday without fail.
Mm-hmm.
So to be, and in fact, I tried to get into Doctor Who about two or three times, writing to the BBC and whoever happened to be producer at the time. And so it was a dream come true. Therefore, you know, as I said, when I got to work on it, you know, I was like, dead chuffed with Colin Baker, and he is a really nice bloke anyway.
Yeah, I've met him.
And he was very complimentary on the first day of rehearsal towards me. And at the end of all the filming of Vengeance, he said, I think Syl is coming back. And Perry said, and if he's coming back, I want to make sure I'm there with him.
Oh, nice. So we're talking about actually, because you've worked with Nicola Bryant twice, and we were talking about how much she developed as an actress from, you know, because at the beginning, where she was probably her first job, she wasn't that good. But by the time she left, she was actually very, very good. She held her own alongside actresses like yourself and Colin and Brian Blessed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that second Doctor Who, the Mind Warp that we did, was a big laugh because Brian Blessed was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's he likes to hog the stage, and so does Colin. So there was nice, friendly rivalry going on between them in the rehearsal room. And I was, like, thinking, it's a good job they're professionals, because you'd think the amount of time we seem to waste fooling about in the rehearsal room, but we wouldn't ever get anything done. But they are professionals, and when it came to the filming, they were there on the, dead on the, you know, doornail with their performances. So, and I know that looking at Ron, the director, during rehearsals, he was sort of laughing at their hijinks, but at the same time, I could hear at the back of his head something like, "Lads, really got to get on with some work."
Yeah.
Marsh minnows. I have to ask, what were they?
They were dyed peaches.
Ah.
Slices of peach. I had a choice. I could either have avocado slices or the peaches. And I wasn't quite sure. You know, avocado can be pretty slimy.
Yeah.
And squidgy. And I was not sure that I really wanted to to be eating those. So I thought the dyed peaches was probably the better option.
I presume you had to eat quite a lot of them as well.
Exactly, yeah. And if you can't go to the loo... Oh, so I was a bit concerned because, you know, once you get into that suit, you're in it for life. At least throughout the whole recording.
Yeah.
And because it's such a hassle to get on and off that you didn't really want to be... So I just had to learn to, you know, tie a knot in it. and the peaches were really worrying.
Because you've got both of them, you've got this lots
and,
of
you know,
juice.
You know, because quite honestly, you don't want, you, because the, you know, my face is not properly attached to the headpiece, the last thing you want is some stuff starting to appear around the edge.
Yeah.
Oh, what a visual thing of my mind of that. Dear me. Oh, that's thrown me.
That's it. That's the end. We finished with this. And that's everyone switched off.
Dear me, my eyes are watering.
Sorry.
It's my fault I asked that question. Yeah, so how long did that costume take? I know you've probably been asked these questions many a time, but not by myself. How long did that costume take to put on?
It took 3 hours.
How many times do you reckon you had to have that taken off and put on during the production of, for instance, Mind Warp?
Well, I mean, with both stories, you go in it in the morning and you don't get out of it until you finish that day because it is such a hassle. Because not only you've got to try and get the suit fitted and get in that, you've also, a lot of that time is spent with the makeup.
Mm.
And especially you have to glue the sides of the head where the face sticks out so that the head will move when you move your head.
Mm.
And you then have to put makeup all around that and, you know, try and match it and so on. So it's a hassle.
I was listening to the commentary on Mind Warp, and Nicola was on there, and she was saying that as the day went by, your right eye started getting covered by part of the edge of the...
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And also, you changed colour slightly from Vengeance on Varus to Mind Warp as well, according to Kirby.
Well, actually, it was a completely new suit.
Oh, it was. All right.
Suit. Yeah.
So all of your animation that you said that you were bringing to the character was really by the end of the day just you needing to use the loo, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Channeling like a good actor. Yes. Yeah.
And all those grimaces on my face—that wasn't acting. That was
too many peaches.
So the suits, they did a much better job with the suit with Mind Warp.
Yeah.
They took into account some of my... Well, one of the problems with the first suit was that there were no air holes.
Oh.
And Ron, the director, literally got a knife and started to stab the suit.
I hope you weren't in it at the time.
I was in it. I was in it. In order to put in some holes and... So if there was, you know, like spots of blood coming out, watch very carefully. That would be me.
Well, if you needed the loo on that one, we'd know where it was going to come out under those circumstances.
But no, it wasn't quite that bad, but you certainly did have to try to punch some holes in there.
Yeah.
And in between takes, I had at least one person, maybe two, with these little pocket battery-operated fans and cooling me down.
Hmm. Shouldn't it would have been more Syl to have had servants with great big wafty palms.
And also, considering Syl's supposed to be cold-blooded, maybe they just got a little bit wrapped up in the character and thought you'd be okay.
Yeah. So, there were some nubile young ladies flicking water at me in between takes as well.
Being pampered.
Yes.
Excellent stuff.
Are you all right?
I just knocked the table.
Oh,
well, I'm sort of running out of time a bit because the Americans have to go to work.
It's 6:40 in the morning to us.
Oh, dear.
And it's our weekend, isn't it? Monday's our weekend. Yeah.
Before I go, would it be possible for you to do a bumper for the show?
A bumper?
Yes.
What's that?
I sort of sent you a script via email.
Oh, right, sure, okay. Now, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is Nabil Shabazz, and you are listening to... You can see I haven't acted for ages. To the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast!
Excellent. Thank you.
I think that'll do it. Thank you very much. Well, Nabil, it's been absolutely fantastic having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
And
yes, thanks for having me.
And I'd love to have you back on again. And I'm sure once Matthew, who one of the runners of Conquesturbaris, knows you might be interested in attending an American convention, which will be next June, by the way.
July, by the way.
Yep. He'll probably be wanting to get in contact with you. I hope he does.
And I'm off the weekend of the Middleborough one, so,
I will also pass the suggestion on to the people here in Atlanta who run Timegate.
Cool.
Oh, yeah, it'd be great to return to Atlanta. There are three gorgeous ladies that I met when I was in Atlanta.
Well, Mary will be there next time, so there'll be a fourth.
Oh, right, well, there'll be four gorgeous ladies then. There was one thing I was going to ask you, Adam.
Yes?
You live in Isle of Wight.
Yes, that's right.
Isle of Wight is a pretty haunted island, isn't it?
It is indeed,
there are hauntings on the island.
Ghost stories.
There are. Very
many. There's books about it and everything.
Yes.
And there's a story of Lucy Lightfoot. Do you know about her?
No.
Oh, Lucy Lightfoot. That's a time travel story. You must look her up.
I will, but no.
She's okay. Based in, or was, based in Isle of Wight, and the story, you know, is set around there. Who knows if it's really true? It's a fascinating story.
I think you'll find, actually, a lot of the hauntings on the island are actually true. I've seen a ghost of a dog.
Have you?
Yeah. Have you?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Where was that?
Just round the corner from my house. I was just walking around to my in-laws, who live just round the corner from us, and this, what I thought was a dog, sort of ran virtually through me, but I thought was round me, up to the corner of the road, and a car was steaming up the road, and I thought, uh-oh, that dog's going to get hit, and the car carried on, the dog, what I thought, ran across the road. But the direction in which it ran and the timing in which it ran across the road, it would have been hit by the car. But so I arrived at my in-laws, thinking, well, that's really weird. I've just seen this dog run out and not get hit by a car. And apparently not so long before then, exactly the dog to that description was an orange dog, got killed in exactly that spot.
I lived in a haunted house around the corner.
Did you?
That was horrible. It was a scary place.
Well, they do Northwood House quite near to us. They do quite regular.
They're brilliant. The ghost walks in the cellars. They're fantastic. Yeah. Very atmospheric.
Apple Durkham House. Yeah. Ghost walks up there. So there's a lot of that sort of thing going on the Isle of Wight that people are very enthusiastic about, the ghost walks and stuff. So, yeah. Of course, we've got loads of wrecks around the island as well. Which,
Lots of smuggling.
We've got Betty Haunt Lane.
Yes,
which is, the name of Betty Haunt Lane tells a story on its own, doesn't it? Yeah. That's haunted by a ghost called Betty. Betty
really?
Haunt.
So,
really?
That's where the headless horseman's, not horseman, there's a headless
coachman is down by Knight and Gorges.
Oh.
I stayed, there's a cemetery that's supposedly haunted.
Mm.
And I camped outside the cemetery one night, hoping to catch a glimpse of the, I think it's the Grey Lady that's supposed to drift around the cemetery. Mm. I didn't see her, but, you know, I was hoping.
Well, we did a wedding at Apple Durkham House, and during the reception, people say there's a ghost that sort of hangs around because Apple Durkham's a semi
ruin.
Yeah. So, but they do wedding receptions there. So they've actually made two rooms up that you can actually use for wedding receptions. But on the second level, where there's no ceiling, there's just the second level, people have seen a girl looking down at the wedding receptions, and doors spontaneously slam while wedding receptions are on, even when it's not windy. So that's definitely haunted, Appleton House.
It's a creepy place. It's really nice.
But it's also a very nice place to have a wedding, listeners, if you happen to be...
No, I love it there.
No,
it's so creepy.
They do ghost walks.
So creepy. I like it.
They incorporate ghost walks into weddings up there.
It's a really beautiful place. Absolutely atmospheric, beautiful, huge.
And the ghost of our dog. In this house, funny enough, our old dog Tigger, who passed away about 8 years ago, we've got a magical star at the moment. Often magic will sleep in Tigger's old chair, and he'll spontaneously jump up and growl and look back at, because obviously the ghost of Tigger has been jumped up into his chair and booted magic off. And you feel these cold areas where the dog, the old dog, has sort of walked past you. So it's going down a very interesting route, as I was saying. The American's about to leave.
I'm going to have to say goodbye because I've got to get pack my lunch and head on out to work.
It's been great talking
to you.
Yeah, and you.
It was delightful talking to you, Nabil. Yes.
Okay, then.
Anyway, thanks, Nabil.
I go too.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Anyway, as I was saying, thank you, Nabil. It's been absolutely fantastic having you on. I'm sure we should really carry on talking about ghosts and stuff. That'd be fantastic. And maybe you should have been in Ghostlight. That would have been quite interesting in regards to Doctor. Good luck in all you do.
All right. Cheers.
Well, next time you come down to the island, let's all go for a ghost walk.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I'd be really up for that.
I have a friend who used to be chief constable.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah,
and I went to see him, it must be about 10 years ago now. Him
so
and his
overdue wife. A visit.
Yes, definitely.
All right, then.
No, thank you very
brilliant.
Much.
No, brilliant.
See you later, then.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Nabil.
Thank you.
See ya.
So it's just us two now.
Just us two now to say, obviously no news this week. Not the usual show,
Mary's
really. So. Is she?
No,
she's
not.
She's gone. They both say goodbye, so they've gone. no news or anything, normal features this week, simply because this show is more or less devoted to Mind Warp and Nabil. So back to normal next week. What is the show we're doing next week?
I do not remember.
I
thought it was Hand of Fear.
I think it is Hand of
Fear. Yeah.
Five votes for Hand of Fear. Right then, next week we'll be looking at Hand of Fear. And if you want to jump ahead, I'm presuming the following, this is episode 229, it's actually 230, is Pyramids of Mars.
Excellent.
Picking out the blooming Tom Baker stories. And then it's, at the moment, Brain of Morbius, another Tom Baker story. And then
that is brilliant, Brain of Morbius.
They're not supposed to give you a review before.
Yeah, I know, but I've got it on the book and I've got it on audio, it's one of my favourites.
And we're up in the air regarding the next one, because Planet of Giants and Web Planet, oh, for God's sake,
got two votes each,
so it's up to Reese Parton to make an excuse and choose something on that one. We could end up with a three-way draw on that one. But anyway, until next week,
that's it.
Thank you for listening to the show. Tutty bye.
Bye.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.
So, are you sending something now then?
Oh, you should already have it. Oh, mind you, it doesn't say scene on it.
No, I can't see it.
Did you get a minion?
A minion?
Yeah, that was sort of like a sticker.
Despicable Me.
A Despicable Me minion thing.
Purple
no. Oh, actually, I'll sort of try and send it again.
Where did you send this? Are you sure you sent it to the right place?
Well, it says Nabil Shaban at the top of the thing. I think it's probably Nabil. Right, I've just sent it again.
Is he supposed to be looking at Facebook or
no,
what?
It's Messenger, so it's a Facebook Messenger, isn't it? So I think it's some people it works on Messenger during Facebook, or it's a separate. Okay. They should all work.
So he should be looking in Facebook.
Or on Messenger, depending if you've got Facebook.
Oh, I'm not on Facebook at all.
No.
How does that work then?
So that's like a fan page or something.
Oh, hang on. I'll see if I can do it another way. Hang on.
Well, how about an instant message?
I'm doing that, Kirby. Oh, sorry, I called Mary Kirby.
No, we're completely different.
Get that hello.
Yeah, send it on Skype.
I'm sending it on Skype. I'm just copying it now. This is great stuff. It's live messing things up. Right,
editing's for.
Be quiet. Oh, yeah, but it's me that has to do the editing, Kirby. I've just sent it via Skype messaging.
Ah, something's coming.
Hey!
There's something coming from Mary, actually. Hey. Hello.
Hello, well, you said hello to me, so I'm saying hello back.
No, it's not from Mary, it's from me.
I was testing the system.
Yeah.
I said, but hello.
Mm-hmm.
Just went stupid it.
And I said,
perhaps it's over on the left-hand side.
Key person.
If you go to me...
Where's me?
Adam David Pearson. That'd be me. You should have
a...
It looks like that, doesn't it? Yeah. You should see it. Yes?
Adam?
Yes?
Why not put it in the... in the messenger section for this conversation, like Mary did?
Nah, no... No, I'll say it. It's probably easier just for me to say it, won't it? What do you think, Nabil? Right. The script is... This is... And then it's an underscore for put name in here. And you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Right. This is... Insert name.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a Kirby coming up.
Oh, Kirby, stop interfering, Mary. Kirby.
A still laugh, too.
Oh, right, oh, good grief. I've said that originally.
A fairy is writing something.
Please stop interfering! You're going to be late for work.
Everyone's fighting.
Yeah.
Colin Baker is writing, and she's there. So, This is Nabil Shaban on Megabyte.
It's the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Some
podcast
or other.
All right, so Mary has sent me a script.
There you go.
Right.